I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking back Detroit with the nation's biggest urban bankruptcy in the rearview mirror, the Motor City and birthplace of Motown finds itself suddenly cool again. Tough, real, and cheap, it has plenty of empty space to fuel any imagination. That is a story in the current issue of National Geographic, and the author of the piece and two of the entrepreneurs who are featured in the piece are with us this hour to talk about Detroit. Susan Egger returned to the city where she was born and worked for 25 years, and she wrote this piece. She lived in the city until she was about 3 years old and then moved to the suburban area. After she moved away for several years, she kept a small condo in Detroit overlooking the river because she says, in the same way you never forget your mother, your heart never leaves your hometown. She has also worked as a columnist for the Detroit Free Press and worked for the Associated Press in Lansing, Michigan, in San Francisco, and also at the San Jose Mercury News. She has an anthology of her work at heart and is sometimes available used, she says, on Amazon. She has is happy to call Detroit her hometown. She now lives in a village of about 500 people in northern Michigan, where she writes, edits, teaches, speaks, and takes on other projects. A little later in the hour, we will speak with two of the entrepreneurs who are featured in this story, and they're really pretty remarkable stories. So we start with Susan. Hi, Susan. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Kathleen. Hi. We'd like to say up here that we're right across the water from Door County.
Yes, that's a good way to think of it. Very nice way to think of it. So Detroit is your hometown, huh, Susan? And it's in your heart.
Yes, it is. I worked there for 25 years for the Detroit Free Press. And even growing up, even though we lived outside the borders of the city, everything we did was in the city. Both of my grandparents, both sets of grandparents lived there. We traveled into the city all the time. My doctors were in the city, and we loved the city. We just loved the city, and so do my brothers still.
And you write that Detroit, America's poorest city, a long-derided city that improbably finds itself cool. And I hear that from people who have been to Detroit. They say, you have to go there. It's really kind of a cool place.
Well, it's full of hope. That's certainly one nice thing about it. People don't complain about Detroit. It's full of, at the moment, it's full of money. It's full of investment. And young people are drawn to it because there are some good paying jobs now. Quicken Loans has, moved the headquarters there, and the head of Quicken Loans, Dan Gilbert, has really bought up much of downtown Detroit and is turning these old abandoned buildings into wonderful loft and condo apartments and things. Some of the young people say that the best moment has passed and prices are rising now, but for a long time you could get a great apartment for, $500 a month.
And is it 12,500 people the head of Quicken Loan employees?
Yes.
All in Detroit? That's huge.
Yes, and they're all young. So it's in the old days, in the worst of times when I worked for the Detroit Free Press downtown, you'd walk on up Woodward Avenue, which is the main artery coming up from the river. You'd walk up Woodward Avenue, and the only people you'd pass would be homeless people, asking
right.
for a quarter. And now the streets are full of, just thronged with young people and places to eat and places to drink and places to shop, expensive stores. And I mean, it's not New York City and it's not Chicago and it's not,
right.
for Detroit, it's a tremendous improvement.
When you talk about its bankruptcy being behind it, why is it behind it? And tell us also the story of the business leaders and foundations that have donated hundreds of millions of dollars to help Detroit.
Well, there was, one of the big issues was paying the pensions for all of the retired city workers. And there was talk for a long time during the bankruptcy of the Detroit Institute of Arts having to sell off, which is city-owned, having to sell off some of its art in order to, pay all these creditors. $18 billion worth of credit, you know, of debts that the city of Detroit had. And the head of the Community Foundation for Southeast Michigan, whose name is Miriam Noland, who I happen to know, put together a plan with other big foundations to come up with the money that was needed to pay the debt so that the Detroit Institute of Arts could be retained, could retain its wonderful pieces. And it's a complex kind of thing that they came up with, but they called it the grand bargain. And I'm not doing it justice here, but it's complex, but it worked, and the retirees agreed to take a cut, and everything, it was a win-win situation.
Right. Let's talk about the down years for Detroit, why people left. There was a time when Detroit had lost half its population, people moving to the suburbs, because of what, race riots mostly in 67
or more
beyond that?
For years, people thought that the race riots in 1967 were the cause of the decline of Detroit. But historians and others have since revised that account. And apparently, the flight from the city began in the late 50s when these wonderful, magnificent freeways were built. I mean, Detroit was at the heart of the road building business in America, had the first urban freeway, and lots of people were just drawn to the wide open spaces beyond the city of Detroit and left. So my parents, when they left in 1957 or 8, were really at the beginning of the flight from downtown and flight from the city. The race riots exacerbated it, and it wasn't just white flight, as it's been described, but also the black middle class no longer felt exactly safe in the city.
Is it still the poorest big city in the country?
Yes.
And what are the...
Yes. Half of the households in Detroit live on $25,000 or less.
Mm. And so what about life prospects for those people as we look at a revitalization? Those people?
Well, it's not exactly bypassing them. It's offering some opportunities to them. But those people tend to live in parts of Detroit that a lot of folks don't think are ever going to be revived, neighborhoods that were once thriving with hardware stores and shoe stores and such, now have nothing, perhaps a liquor store. Everybody that I talk to who lives in those places, in those neighborhoods that aren't coming back, are still delighted to see in the distance, the glow of downtown, literally and figuratively. But there's been a lot of disgruntlement with the fact that most of the investment money is white money. I mean, there's still this racial tension that people want to try to avoid because nobody wants to go through what Detroit went through in the 60s and 70s racially, with the racial tension. But some of the foundations are trying to get involved more, entrepreneurs of color, and try to create a diverse ambiance. Even downtown now is feeling really young and white.
Mm-hmm. You talk about Detroit, maybe it was in its heyday. Your grandparents came to Detroit for jobs. The number of people, maybe it was the first, working people, middle class city where they did okay, worked for the automakers and
yes,
had a pretty good house and maybe even a little cabin and a boat.
That's correct. And we my editors and I argued about the phrasing of that sentence because I said, you could be an auto worker and have a nice house and have a boat and have a cabin up north. And my editor said, what's up north? And I don't know whether your folks in Wisconsin know, but, up north.
We know.
Is any place in our state, is any place north of Flint? You drive up I-75, which is our major north-south through a freeway, and you drive up 75 to your cottage up north every weekend.
Mm-hmm. The bankruptcy of GM and Chrysler that happened recently, what's been the aftermath of that?
Well, it was devastating. I mean, it was devastating. People lost their jobs. People lost their homes. People abandoned their homes. People abandoning homes meant neighborhoods were abandoned. Mm. It was really the last straw before the bankruptcy. There was corruption. I don't know. I didn't get into it in the story, but we had a mayor named Kwame Kilpatrick who cost the city millions of dollars and shamed the city also. And nobody mentions his name anymore. he's in the past. People really are trying to, I think, avoid the mistakes of the past and focus on a brighter future. Literally brighter. I mean, one of the things that the new mayor has done is pledge to replace all of the streetlights in the city of Detroit by, I think it's the end of this year, and is doing very well at that. I mean, it's a symbolic thing, but it's very meaningful to people.
Well, we're talking some 40,000 streetlights, right?
Yes, yes.
A lot of streetlights.
Yes.
Our producer, KP Whaley, just returned from a trip to Detroit where he spent some days, and I'm interested in his observations because he was just really high on the trip. He really liked Detroit. So tell me if this jives with your observations. When I visited Detroit, he writes, I felt like I was in the city comparable in size to Chicago, and was amazed that I could go from the suburbs to the city center in minutes when a similar trip in Chicago would have taken hours. It was due partially to the lack of traffic. I was struck by the number of vacant buildings. I'm not talking about homes and residences, which were plenty, but the number of skyscrapers, factories, and business parks that were vacant, burned out, and or tagged with graffiti, even dozens of stories high. I saw communities on the edge of the city core where new life was beginning, a bar, a restaurant, renovated buildings with apartments, new businesses forming around an area that probably a few years ago was one of these vacant areas. Also, he observed and talked a lot about it when he came back, new urban farmers who've established growing operations with greenhouses and food distribution hubs or soup kitchens in what used to be blocks of a residential neighborhood. I couldn't believe that a city could literally collapse and the businesses would just up and leave, but was encouraged at the number of new and young people investing their time, energy, and spirit to take back these places with their own new ideas.
Yep. That's exactly right. Well, you should have that guy on.
I asked him to write up something for us.
That's absolutely accurate. Detroit is considered the leader in urban agriculture. There's, vast, vast acres of emptiness that are called urban prairies. I don't know whether other big cities have this, but we call them urban prairies, where there might be a house on one block, one house left standing, and maybe two blocks away there's another house. And lots of land in between to do whatever you want with. I mean, artists love these spaces. They can get these homes for cheap, or they can rent them for cheap, and they can do whatever they want on the empty land. And the farming that's going on is incredible. Detroit has a fabulous farmers market that operates every day from the wee hours of dawn. During the week, it's mostly for wholesale exchanges, but on the weekend, on Friday and Saturday, it's just one of the best places to go in Detroit, in the heart of Detroit. And a lot of these young urban farmers and people who are doing food, small-scale food production, making jams and making hot sauces and pickling, wild leeks and things like that, they're all selling their stuff at the farmers market in Detroit. And he's so right about the roads. There are traffic jams, but they are not anywhere near what you find in most cities, because most of the jobs now are outside the city, so people are going out rather than into the city. And the other big thing Detroit's got is every Monday during the nice seasons of the year is a bicycle event called Slow Roll. And Slow Roll started with a group of friends who would get together to bike around the city, and now it's 3,000 and 4,000 bicyclists get together and bike around the city, and it's considered again one of the best cities in the nation to bike, because A, it's flat, B, there's not much traffic, C, you can, in some of these neighborhoods, you can see deer and you can see pheasants and you can see foxes, and it's remarkable.
That is pretty remarkable for a big city. Detroit had been known as the homicide capital of the country as well. Does it still have that moniker?
No. You know, crime is still a big concern. The worry is that these young people will come to Detroit and laugh and spend money and, you know, work hard, and then the minute they become partnered and want to have children, that they'll leave because there's still a lot of, there's still a lot of small-time crime. And the murder rate is up there, but I think we're nowhere near Atlanta and Chicago and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Why do you hold, what is it about Detroit? Because we all have hometowns, and many of us, of course, are attached to our hometowns, but some of us kind of leave them and don't even call it our hometown on our Facebook pages later on. Why is Detroit sort of near and dear to you? What pulls you?
I talk to so many people from Detroit who say the same thing. It's been, for most of my life, it's been an underdog, you know? It's been kicked around, and it's been beat up by the media,
right.
often for good reason. And it's, you know, the core population of the city are hardworking, middle class, close to their families. They love their homes. We're a city of homes, not apartments. They take care of their homes, and, you know, this kind of ethnic commitment to family and place. I think that's big for me. People are very fond of Detroit sports teams, even those that don't win very often, like the Detroit Lions. And so there's, I don't know, in the music, you know, we've got this great music and history of jazz and Motown music, and now, what's it called? Well, I'm blanking on it. Not electronic, what's it called?
I don't know, somebody pretty young.
It's not hip-hop, but it's, techno music, I guess, is what it's called, something like that. But Detroit's always been a big music city. I think there's a lot of reasons. The food is great, the Coney Dogs, the Polish food, the punchki, it's a diverse place that's also beautiful. It's got a beautiful river running through it, beautiful architecture. I don't know, but I think the underdog thing is
I get
kind
that.
Of key yeah. for me. You got to root for it. You got to.
Yeah. Susan Egger is our guest, and her piece is in the current issue of National Geographic magazine. It's on Detroit, which is beginning to attract young people, some entrepreneurs from different parts of the world who have come in and invested heavily in Detroit. So after the city underwent bankruptcy and GM and Chrysler falling apart and people leaving in great numbers, losing a huge population, it's having a rebirth. Some of you, I'm sure, listening are from Detroit. You either left or you decided that maybe you would return, or you certainly visited because it is a place that's near and dear to you. We'd love to hear from you or from those of you who have been there recently, as KP was, and gave us his astute and accurate observations of what's going on in Detroit right now. Our phone number, if you would like to join this conversation, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. A little later in the hour, we will speak with a couple people who Susan features in her article, innovators and entrepreneurs who are investing in Detroit. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, Detroit is what we're talking about this hour. Let's start with an email, which is a good one. Can you answer this? Detroit is geographically a big city. I heard it could contain several other American cities. Did this contribute to its problems? And also, was Coleman Young good for Detroit?
Oh, yes, Detroit is a very big city. It's 139 square miles. That doesn't count the
water.
Ooh,
that's big.
Yeah, and I think I wrote that it can contain Manhattan, Boston, and San Francisco geographically. So that's part of, well, yes, I guess that can, it didn't, I don't think its size contributed to its problems. I mean, it was a thriving, very large city for a long time. Now its size is daunting when urban planners and others with ideas for developing the city try to figure out what to do with that space. Most of the action that's happening now in the city is in about, you know, maybe 10 square miles, maybe less. I mean, at the heart of the city. And people say, oh, it's going to start at the heart and it's going to move out. Well, maybe or maybe not. Maybe new ideas need to be considered. I'm not a historian. Was Coleman Young bad for the city? I think, you know, my opinion is that for readers who don't know or listeners who don't know, Coleman Young was a mayor of the city quite a few years ago. He was the first black mayor, and he was had a powerful personality and a sort of a screw-you attitude toward the suburbs. I hope I can say that. I was going to say something stronger because he spoke very vividly.
No, I think what you said is perfectly fine.
Okay. And toward suburbia and sort of an attitude about white people also that scared a lot of white people away from the city. But one of his closest aides is a man I know quite well who's a white guy. And some of the revisionist history about Detroit has shown that Coleman Young was not – Coleman Young handled – I don't want to outspeak my knowledge here – handled the finances of the city of Detroit responsibly and was not – you know, did not dig the city into the ground, although I think he wasn't the best diplomat and ambassador for the city.
Mm-hmm. And Scotty Myers, our producer this hour, tells us the music genre that we were trying to think of is techno, or Detroit techno.
That's right. I think I did get it in the last moment there.
There we go.
Techno.
Very influential in the electronic music world.
Thank you, Scotty.
Yeah, thanks, Scotty. Kendra, Milwaukee, hi.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, I was wondering if they're still cutting off the water to people that cannot pay, and if Canada is still supplying water to people that are poor and cannot pay their water bills.
Well, what I've read, Kendra, and I only know what I've kind of casually read, is that they've been trying to work on deals where, you know, people can pay in payments and this and that. Everybody seems to agree was a poorly, the city handled it very poorly in the beginning, and I think is trying to kind of do better, but I know there are still a lot of people who haven't been able to pay, and the city's not sure what to do. It's pretty controversial, you know. A lot of people think, well, if you can't pay for your own water, then you shouldn't be able to buy a house if you can't pay for your own water. Well, people bought these houses years ago, or they inherited them, and now they're worth nothing, you know, to sell. And it's an unusual situation. But I don't know the details. I'm sorry, Kendra.
Thanks for the call, Kendra. Let's go to Stephen in Madison. Hi, Stephen.
Hi. I was born in Kalamazoo in 56 and grew up in Nebraska. And every summer we made this pilgrimage back to St. Joe Ben Harbor area. And then in 77, I moved to Madison, and I've lived here since. And I just always had an affinity for the Great Lakes region because of that every summer trip back to Michigan. And a few years back, we discovered the UP, and I just love hearing that Detroit is coming around, and I want to go see it someday. I've never been there.
Oh.
And,
and
an observation, I think if California epitomizes the car culture where you got to have a car to go anywhere, I think Michigan's a close second, it seems. They really like their cars and their roads, and thanks for taking my call.
Thanks, Stephen. They like their bikes, too.
The thing, Stephen, that's happening in Detroit is these young people don't like cars. You know, I read a few years ago that young people aren't eager to get their driver's licenses at 16 like our generation was. And there are bicycles everywhere in downtown Detroit. People walk, and people try to rely on the buses. The bus system is improving, but slowly, too slowly. And of course, we have no significant mass transit. There's a rail line being built up Woodward, about 3.3 miles, I think. That's not going to do much except move these young people up and down among the bars and restaurants and shops. So we need to get with the times in terms of transit. But you know, Stephen, bring your bicycle and come on down to Detroit. You'd love it, I think. If you love Madison, I think you'd love Detroit.
Huh. Thanks, Stephen, for the call. I haven't been to Detroit in years, but I'm trying to get a sense of how many jobs are in the suburban areas, how far away the suburban areas are, if there are a lot of suburbanites who come into Detroit for jobs. What's that scene?
Well, I think, you know, the suburbs are... Detroit is... how would I say what Detroit is shaped like? It's kind of like... Detroit is kind of like a half circle, you know, and in the middle of the half circle is downtown, and the half circle rests on the river. So Detroit is ringed by, you know, by suburbs, and it's not very hard to get to them, but you have to drive. There's not mass transit that's reliable. The metropolitan area of Detroit is quite well to do. There's a lot of auto-related businesses still, engineering, high-tech. There's a lot of jobs in metropolitan Detroit. But the jobs in the city, other than, you know, Quicken and some auto-related jobs, are not well-paying at the moment.
Yeah. So tell me, we're going to meet a couple of them, but tell me about, other than Robert and Amir Farouki. Other than those two, tell me about some of the other people, because you have an interesting cast of characters in your piece.
People who are
doing well, you know?
Yes, yes. Oh, my gosh. I talked to one young guy. He had moved from Brooklyn. He's not named in the story, but he's mentioned. I mean, I had many more people in the original story, and the National Geographic just didn't have room for all these people,
right?
Which is too bad. But you know, a guy who moved to Detroit with his girlfriend, who had started a juice business with her. She was from Metro Detroit, started a juice business, and he came with $500 and rented a storefront and decided he wanted to carry all Michigan products. And started this little bodega. Amir knows about him. And he told me, he said, nowhere else in the world could I have done this. And ended up with a successful business, living in a friendly, up-and-coming neighborhood. He just felt like he had to pinch himself. You know, there was two women I interviewed who are, one is a native Detroiter and one is from somewhere else in Michigan, I can't remember. They are an African-American lesbian couple who got married in Canada a few years ago, and they have started in a nearly abandoned building, they have started a restaurant called Detroit Vegan Soul. And they are doing fabulously well. Mm. They're, you know, one of them cooks, one of them runs the front of the house, and they are trying to be examples and role models for other Detroiters, native Detroiters, to kind of get in on the rebound and do something with their ideas and their dreams and their hopes for the city.
I was really struck when you talked about the young man who came with $500 in his pocket. Imagine going anywhere and being able to fashion a successful business and pay the first and last month's rent.
Right, right, right. Well, I mean, it helped that he had a partner who was earning money at a business. But he's a dear man. I wish I could have included his story.
Kendra in Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi there. I was born in Detroit in the mid-60s, And the way that I remember part of things is Coleman Young and his antagonism with the white suburbs is one of the reasons there is literally no mass transit at all. I used to live near City Airport, in fact, and it has really broken my heart to be home and visited places near where I lived and where my cousins used to live. And literally, it looks like a war zone, like there were bombs dropped. It's really wonderful to hear about everything that's happening now in a rebirth, because as a child, I remember going downtown. I remember Belle Isle. I remember the Hudson's that was downtown. That was always a big thing to do all around the holidays. I remember going to Eastern Market, the farmer's market, as a child. So I remember a lot of the good things about Detroit, and I'm excited to hear that good things are coming again.
Susan.
Yeah, and all those things that you remember, I mean, Hudson's is gone, but Hudson's was the huge department store that we all knew, all of us in Detroit, and there were other Hudson's around the state. That's gone, but Belle Isle is more beautiful than ever. The state has taken it over. It's now a state park, and people report feeling safer there, and lots of happy things are going on in Belle Isle.
And one more call for you, Jeff in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon. This is a wonderful conversation. I noticed that many communities have grown their microbreweries, especially like the Twin Cities has done that. I'm wondering if that's happening in Detroit. And there used to be a beer they made in Detroit. I can't remember the name of it. But my roommate in college used to bring it all the time, and he always loved that beer from Michigan.
Are you thinking of Stroh's?
That's it.
Stroh's beer. Yeah, Stroh's beer is gone. I wish I could tell you about microbreweries. I'm not a beer fan, but I did find a wonderful distillery in downtown Detroit making wonderful gin and bourbon and things like that. So, I know there's places like that opening. I can't be specific with you about the microbreweries.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know beer.
Thank you very much, Jeff, for your call. Susan, it's a lovely article. You're a lovely writer, and thank you so much for being with us. We're going to speak now with two of the people you featured in your article.
Well, thank you. I hope you enjoy them. I liked both of them very much.
I'm sure we will. Thanks. Susan Egger, and she wrote the piece that's in National Geographic for the month of May, and she is a great writer. Taking Back Detroit, with the nation's biggest urban bankruptcy in the rearview mirror, the Motor City and birthplace of Motown finds itself suddenly cool again. Tough, real, and cheap. It has plenty of empty space to fuel any imagination, and it has fueled the imaginations of our next two guests, who are entrepreneurs. We'll meet them in a moment here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Two of the people featured in the National Geographic article are with us now, and they're very interesting. Amir Farouki first heard about Detroit's potential when he was living in another country. And so he flew into Detroit from his home in Singapore. He is a retired top executive of the multinational Cargill, and he spent his liquid assets to buy 150 homes to refurbish and rent. And I understand that he has really been taken by the city and likes it, may stay a while. Amir Farouki, thank you very much for being with us.
Good afternoon, Kathleen. Thank you very much for having me.
Well, that's a long distance from Singapore all the way to Detroit, isn't it?
Indeed. I think it's a six-movie flight.
So where did you hear about the up-and-coming Detroit? What made you take such a huge risk, really?
Well, I think as Susan Susan wrote in her article, and didn't Susan do just a terrific job with that article?
It's a lovely article, yes.
I think we should make her ambassador for the city. I was standing her. We were sitting down in London at a hotel at the Savoy, I think, just having drinks, talking to this young man, and he talked about Detroit. And I had never been there before. We listened to him, we thought it sounded too good to be true. And typically when things are too good to be true, they really are. But we thought we'd better come and have a look. And so we hopped on the plane, came to Detroit, spent a few days, and found out that, no, it wasn't too good to be true. It was, we thought, too good to last. I still feel 2 years on that is the case. There's a great story, and it will change very rapidly.
And you bought several properties, but you bought your own home and furnished it with antiques, I understand.
We found this auction house. It's an old family from Michigan that do Michelle's. And we found this store and had these lovely things, and we wondered what it was, what kind of a store sells these things. And you know, it's an interesting commentary on the fall of Detroit. So you've all heard about people losing their homes, and used to be a really wealthy city. Well, people didn't just lose their homes. They lost their wonderful belongings.
Oh, right.
Thankfully, a lot of those sort of essentially got recycled because they'd come up for auction down the road. And so we found these beautiful things. And yes, are fortunate enough to have many of them in our home.
Mm-hmm. And I also love the fact that you evidently are giving loans to young people who want to take risks, and you don't charge interest.
Well, we feel very blessed. We've had all kinds of good breaks given to us, and we felt our organization, Banyan Investments, has a foundation, and it isn't just our money. I have some wonderful friends who said, oh, this sounds like a really good story. Here, take my money and give it away as well. And that's been kind of nice. So we find we find these young entrepreneurs who, just like the young chap that Susan mentioned who had opened up his bodega, David's his name, by the way, and the two girls who run Detroit Vegan Soul, Kirsten and Erica, you know, they've put their money where their mouth is. They've put in their blood, sweat, and tears, and so they need just a little bit of help. And we're able to then go in and look at what they've got and give them. It's a grant. We don't charge any interest. We tell them that they should decide how long they need the money for. I'm in no hurry. It takes them a year or two or three. They must have a good business and must work at it. And when they're ready, they don't pay it back to our foundation. They give it forward to someone else.
Oh, I like that. Also joining us, another person featured in Susan's article in National Geographic, Robert Hake. And Robert has this growing custom sportswear company, and it's now in the city's Corktown neighborhood, mylocker.net. He can ship 100 hoodies for your family reunion in days. Robert, thank you very much. Is it my understanding that you moved your business from the suburbs into the city of Detroit?
That's correct.
Why?
Yeah, with the growth that we were experiencing, we were having to move a lot from building to building to keep growing in the new space. And the building that we purchased in Corktown was just north of 120,000 square feet, so it gave us plenty of growth room. So we didn't have to keep moving every few years, and we could grow into the building instead of continually, you know, transitioning from building to building.
And did you have trepidations about making such a move?
Absolutely. You know, when I first came down into this location, it was very, I guess you could say, dead.
Mm-hmm.
There weren't cars driving around. Back to the streetlights conversation earlier, there were no streetlights. So it was dark, it was quiet, it was, you know, abandoned buildings, blown out glass, graffiti buildings everywhere. And so I was very scared of them initially. And I feel like, you know, when we purchased this building, it triggered a reaction. And a lot of the buildings that were available within 3 months, 4 months of us purchasing this building all got snatched up very quickly.
Really?
And, yeah, and over the last, you know, year and a half since we've been here, the change has just been remarkable. The street lights are coming on. The buildings are getting fixed up. I don't think there's been a time that I've driven to work or from work where I haven't seen construction happening on the short drive I have from the building to the highway to get home.
And Amir, what about you? Did you have, well, you must have had some. You moved all the way from the Philippines to Detroit. Did you have trepidations?
Indeed, from Singapore. Well, we I remember we landed at the airport, at Detroit Airport, and we were asked by the customs official, by the immigration official, purpose of visit, and we said, we're investors. And he said, buying or selling? I said, buying. And he said, I think almost verbatim, he said, are you crazy? Don't you have any friends? Didn't anyone tell you about Detroit? If I were you, I'm going to let you in, but you should just go to the exit counter and get on the next plane. And I thought, that's an interesting welcome.
Yeah, quite a welcome.
I agree with Robert. I think 2 years ago I would have said Detroit's not for the faint of heart. Mm-hmm. It is going through such a transformation. I tell you, Kathleen, the one thing that, more than anything else, that keeps people like myself and all these other believers in Detroit, Susan talked about, and perhaps you, that the city had been beat up. But I really felt that it wasn't beaten down.
I see.
And you know, when it's always, if the people from Detroit believed in themselves, then others would as well. So there are signs everywhere that say Opportunity Detroit. There are people who are willing to slog it out. And yes, you don't go down dark alleys, but there are fewer of them. It's a terrific city.
Mm. Isn't that something? And I know that you, Robert, hired, and tell us a little bit about him. He searched Google for graffiti artists. You gave him, how does the story read here? You gave the one you hired a key and instructions, do whatever you want, wherever you want, whatever you want. That's a nice way to start your job.
Yeah, well, you know, the products that we decorate and embellish products. And, you know, with that said, we provide a lot of color and to garments, and so it's a very colorful environment here. And you know, had the idea as I was driving in, wow, look at all this beautiful art that's on the outside of these buildings. How cool would that be if we put it on the inside of ours? So the graffiti artist's name was Shades, and met with him, and he's just an electric personality, and it just really felt right. And back to the instruction, well, I gave him instruction initially of what I wanted him to do. And when I came in the next day, he didn't really follow anything that I had asked him to do. But what he did was 10 times cooler than what I asked him to do. So then the conversation turned to, I'll tell you what, you've got a key, come whenever you want, and do whatever you want. And he's really, really got the inside of the building to life, and it's really made a cultural difference here.
Mm-hmm. Do both of you have faith that this renaissance will continue, and if anything could stop it, what would it be, Robert?
Well, I've never really lived through a renaissance before. This being the first experience I've had with it, I can't see it stopping because all I'm seeing is progression right now and forward movement. So, you know, not having any experience in seeing something that can take it down, I don't see it stopping.
Mm-hmm. What about the schools? I know that you made a trip to some of the local schools, which are not thought to be great schools, to give hundreds of students T-shirts.
Yeah, that's... You know, outside these pockets of Corktown and Midtown, it is a very desolate and deprived world. And it was really eye-opening to me. You know, as Susan said in the article, the highways really shield the reality of what's happening. And, you know, you come into Corktown, and it's great. And now that the lights are all on and the buildings are being all fixed up and everything's coming to life, well, just, you know, on the borders of this area, that's not the reality. And we have a long way to go for that to change, I think.
Mm-hmm. Amir, what needs to be done about the other areas?
I think a couple of things, Kathleen. As I listened to Robert, I think he's absolutely right. It isn't all of Detroit that had to use the Midwestern phrase, gone to hell in a handbasket. And not all of it is going to come back all at the same time and with the same resurgence. There are pockets. The idea now is to make sure that that we preserve what is there to preserve and then start linking these smaller neighborhoods together and with stronger and stronger bonds and make the city come back again. What is really important, you asked about what might stop it. I think the lack of transparency in governance would be a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that there is now a respected, energized government in City Hall, I think has gone a very long way. And they should continue. They should continue doing the right thing. And it'll come together. I think you talked about schools, as did Robert. Schools, education is obviously going to be a key thing. Susan talked about the fact that young people move in, but then as soon as they have a child, they start looking at better schools and they tend to be in the suburbs and they move out. there are organizations, something called the Cornerstone Schools, which have gotten a terribly good reputation. And so I think between education and transparent governance, we might be onto a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Robert, do you think you're there for the long haul?
Yeah, I do. You know, one thing I'm really excited about is the opportunity that I have in front of myself with this business. We've got a long way to go, and there's a lot of room for growth in what we're doing. And so I really see making an impact on this local area that I'm in, and going from, you know, the hundreds of people that are working here to in a relatively quick amount of time to thousands.
Goodness.
So that part of me is really, you know, is excited, and especially to, you know, to bring manufacturing to Detroit, and it just feels right.
Mm-hmm. And Amir, is this your new home?
It is indeed. It is.
Really?
It is home. We decided commuting from Singapore for me, and I have a partner who's from Australia, commuting from Australia for him, was going to get all in a hurry. So earlier this year, we moved. The U.S. Embassy in Singapore granted me an investor's visa.
Huh.
And I said, well, thank you. She said, you're going to Detroit? I said, yes. Have you been there? She said, oh, my goodness. No, I'm from New York. Thank you for going to Detroit.
Well, you need to start a business that extols the virtues of Detroit, I guess, right? You got to change some minds.
Indeed, indeed.
That's a big thing, though, to move to another country, no matter where you're from.
Well, I've done that a few times, and so, you know, my children used to living in different places. I chuckle when you talk about young people not wanting driver's licenses. I have two daughters in England, and neither of them want one. They seem to be doing fine just without. I keep telling them, drive a car. It helps Detroit.
Right. Well, I thank you so much for being with us. What did you think of the article, Robert? Were you pleased with it? I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, I agree. I was very curious to read it, and when I did, it was a lot more than I actually thought that I would get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So Susan did an absolutely wonderful job with it.
I think so too. Amir?
Absolutely. I've had calls from people in all parts of the world, four different continents.
Oh.
Talking about this particular article, and National Geographic's a great magazine, and I agree with Robert. I thought Susan did just a terrific job writing it all out and weaving the stories and...
You know, it was pretty funny when the article came out. Shades, the graffiti artist, called me and he said, "People are reading about us in Zimbabwe."
And so they are, and seeing some mighty pretty pictures too.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you both so much. I really enjoyed meeting both of you, and all the best.
Very welcome. Yep. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, yep. Our pleasure. Our thanks to Amir Farouki, and we thank Robert Haig, two of the entrepreneurs who are featured in the article in the current issue of National Geographic, the one that has the dolphin on the front. We did the dolphin show last week. That was great. And the article about Detroit is great as well. We also thank Susan Egger, who is writer who wrote for the Detroit Free Press for a long, long time and is a freelance writer now and living in Michigan and is a native of Detroit. Thanks to Scotty Myers for producing this interesting show and to Scotty as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. News is coming up from National Public Radio and we'll be with you again tomorrow at 1 o'clock. And thank you very much for listening.